What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I'm your host, Curry Blanford, and today we are finishing up our Revelation and Work series. So I don't know about you, but I've really been enjoying this series on Revelation and Work. I think taking a book like Revelation and showing how practical it can actually be, I think is a really worthwhile thing. So I hope you've gotten something out of this as we've walked through sort of this introduction to the book of Revelation. We talked about the throne room scene where God just kind of the interpretive lens for the entire book, this great throne room and the slain lamb. We talked through the woman and the dragon and how God protects his church. And we've talked about last week, the harlot of Babylon and just what it means for us to exist in a market economy that wants to kind of take us down and what it means to not sell out to that economy that is so easy to do. And so today we're wrapping it up with, I think, maybe one of the most hope-filled passages in all of the Bible. And by that, I mean the most hope-filled passage in all of the Bible with the new creation. And so let's start off by just kind of setting the stage for what the new creation is before we kind of read the text and dig into it. So actually, the new creation really begins at Jesus's resurrection. And I always teach on this, and I always talk about, if you can imagine the globe, I got this from one of my professors in college. If you imagine the globe and it's like sort of intact, but all of a sudden it has little cracks in it all over the place, like a marble maybe, or a sphere with cracks all throughout it, and maybe light kind of shining through those cracks. That is what the new creation is. So this new creation, or renewed creation, as we'll talk about here later on, was introduced with Jesus, and Jesus is sort of the forebearer who goes before us into this new creation. So our hope is following in Jesus' resurrection, just like he did, into the new creation, which is this final end. And so so we look to Jesus and his resurrected body and the resurrection for our hope of what's to come. Like, it's really pretty simple, but I think we've convoluted this a lot. You know, when we think about the afterlife, a lot of times it's always like this very ethereal thing where our souls have sort of floated away from our bodies, and we're now kind of out there and up somewhere, kind of floating around playing harps or on streets of gold or whatever you want to kind of way you've sort of brought this about in your mind. But the real hope of the future is not some ethereal plane where we're disembodied, but a literal new creative hope in a resurrection where we will be brought back to life, where it's not that death literally doesn't conquer us because we go to heaven. It's that death literally does not conquer us, that though our bodies may die in this life, we look forward to a bodily resurrection, just like Jesus. And I think we need to just set that vision for the future out at the beginning, and I'll circle back to all that and relate it to work at the end. But I just need to set the stage there that our hope is not ethereal and floaty and cloudy and all of that stuff, but it is bodily and it's physical and it's renewed creation, which is what our hope is in and what has been the plan really the whole time from the beginning. We just kind of got, our culture kind of got tripped up along the way somewhere, probably just bringing in outside philosophies like Plato, which have these ideas of forms up somewhere sort of floating around, perfect forms. And but our religion is, Christianity is very bodily. It's physical, and it's meant to be that way. So that's my little first soapbox here, because you know I love a good soapbox. But let's read through a little bit of Revelation 21. I'm reading from the NIV like normal. I'll just start in verse 1 here, and then we'll kind of maybe dig into it a little bit. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. Listen, He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give water without cost from the spring of the water of life. Those who are victorious will inherit all this, and I will be their God and they will be my children. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those practicing magical arts, the idolaters and liars, they will be consigned to the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. And now I'm going to skip down to verse 22 right at the end here. I did not see a temple in the city, because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. The nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Nothing impure will ever enter it, nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So, come on. I mean, just like hope-filled, right? I mean, it's just incredible that like that is the future to which we are looking. It's not, yeah. Again, I don't want to jump back on that soapbox, but we're looking forward to a future hope, a bodily future hope here someday. And I want to talk about a few things here. It's kind of confusing at the beginning. It says, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away. And new is not probably the best way to even think about that. It's not like it's brand new, sort of created from nothing. There is a word for that in Greek, and this does not describe that. What this describes is sort of a renewal. So we're talking about renewed creation. And that's where all this idea of like in verse 4, he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And I just think, like, we need that hope, right? Especially right now, we need the hope of the future, of the resurrection, of a new life to come, that where there's literally death died right on the cross. And it may not feel like that, where death is all around us and, you know, there's still mourning and crying and pain, and the old order is still very much alive and well in the form of the dragon and his minions, like we've talked about the last couple of weeks, but we have a future hope of the life of the world to come. Right. And I just love how, you know, I read a lot of this passage, but I just love how, like, thinking about God, like, being literally with us, right. God being, the sun, so that we don't even need light, you know, from outside sources, that God is just, right there with us. And, to that extent, I think we need to think about us living lives on a renewed earth. What does that look like, right? So we go and look at, you know, Jesus' body and the resurrection, like I talked about, how he was the first fruits of that resurrection, that began that resurrection or the new creation process. And Jesus, you know, it's hard to know exactly how all this stuff is going to play out. But Jesus had marks where he had died still on his resurrected body, that there was still a part of the old body, but in a new form, right? But he was physical. He walked around on this earth before the ascension, right? There's a physical nature of it. And that is like more of how we can think about like existing on this earth, right? It's not in some disembodied state, but in a bodily state. So when we are going to be walking upon this earth, just like we are today, but renewed, with no tears or crying or mourning or pain, right? So like all of the things that have been wrong have been made unwrong. You know, they've been taken away, and this old order is gone, and now we have this new order. And so when we think about this analogy of living life on earth, of having physical bodies, of of existing on this earth in a similar yet dissimilar way to how we are now. Let's bring it to work. What does that mean for our work? Right. And I think what it means is that in some way, the things that we do on this earth matter for the future. I don't exactly know how to sort of like break all that down. I'm not sure exactly what all of that means, but I think for too long, we've been looking to a spiritual future, a disembodied future, which led us to undervalue the things that we do here on earth at this time. Right. This is where we get the mentality where only the pastor or the missionary has a sort of kingdom worthwhile job and everybody else's job is just to sort of support that, you know, financially or through the church or whatever. But the truth is that everything you do right now has a future, there's some sort of analogy. There's some sort of renewed analogy that is going to take place in this new heavens and new earth someday. And I don't think we think about that enough. There's so much despair over, hey, I'm not in ministry, I'm not doing God's work. And the truth is that we're all doing God's work. Even of those of us that don't feel like we're working or not capable of working, we're still put here to do God's work. There's still work to be done on this earth in preparation for this renewed creation. That was the whole point of Jesus' ministry on this earth. And I think that if we could just like flip a switch in our brains where it's not just Sunday morning and it's not just church work that matters, but everyday work matters, I think it could change how we go about everything that we do. Think about working. What would it mean to work for the kingdom? It's your job right now. Like what would it mean to flip a switch and think about how the impact you're making at your job, no matter what it is, or at home, no matter what you're doing, could have impact into the future of the kingdom of God? That is a powerful switch in our thinking, and it's a powerful way of thinking about new things. I often wonder what there will be for pastors to do in the new creation, right? A lot of pastors' jobs are pointing towards Jesus, and yet he's going to be right there, right? So what is it that a pastor's role is in that new creation or missionaries or, you know, when God is fully present with us, there might be some new skills that need to be developed in those ways so that we're contributing to a renewed creation. I just can't tell y'all how enlivening this is for me, how precious this is to me. This like way of thinking changes how I think about how I go about my day, how I interact with my children, my children's role into the kingdom. Like right now they're doing kingdom work. And I don't think that's just, you know, preparing for something greater, but I think part of what they're going through even now is kingdom stuff about God's kingdom. And so I try to think about, you know, what it means for them to operate in the kingdom, how we can understand the kingdom from their perspective in ways, you know, where they haven't learned everything, but still have something to give. I think there is a lot there to really think about. I also just, man, I am in need of serious hope right now. The world just seems to be getting crazier, from political turmoil to you name it, talking heads to, you know, the coronavirus and all these things that we're experiencing right now. I just need hope. And I think you probably need hope too. And I just want to leave you with this hope that one day he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And that is the future to which we look. That's a future to which we grasp onto. Like that is all that we have in so many ways, is that hope of the future. And we as Christians are supposed to be bringing that hope. We're supposed to be heralding that hope. Like living in light of that hope and that future to come. And so many times we're just bogged down with despair. And despair happens. Despair is going to happen. I was thinking of a time, you know, I became a Christian when I was 18, just barely, I didn't know what to do. Like, I had this call to ministry. I felt like God had called me. I'd never heard from God before, but I felt like God was calling me into ministry. And so I asked a mentor of mine that I had discovered after I, you know, became a Christian or redevoted my life to Christianity. And he told me about this college up in Chicago called Moody. And I was like, okay, that seems like a easy way. So I eked my way into Moody, but like barely passing the appropriate grades that needed to be done to get in there. And I'm like, I go to Chicago, my family drops me off, and I am so excited to be, you know, going into ministry. And that first semester was maybe the hardest time of my entire life. Back home, you know, I'm in Chicago doing this, you know, studying for ministry thing. And back home, like, things were just falling apart. Just tragedy after tragedy was going on. And I wasn't able to get back because of some, my parents had accidentally taken my ID home with them, and I couldn't get it back. You know, it was literally in the mail somewhere and couldn't get it back. And I just, man, I struggled. It was so hard to think about, yeah, going into ministry and doing these things that you felt like God really wanted me to do, and just like, just struggling. I had nobody. I knew nobody up in Chicago. I had no support here. And so I'd go into the racquetball court and I would just rent it for an hour and hit a racquetball into the wall as hard as I possibly could for hours on end. That's what I would do with a lot of my free time. People definitely thought I was a weirdo, which is okay. But despair is going to happen. And I don't think, or I think that despair and hope can be kind of held at the same time. Like things can be hard, and I agree that things are hard. Things are hard for me, and yet there's hope, and that hope doesn't cancel out and doesn't make all those things go away that are hard. But hope allows us to push on. And hope is all we have to give to a world that desperately needs hope, that does not have hope, that is hopeless. And a lot of times you look into the Christian world right now, and we are purveyors of bringing more hopelessness than hope. The infighting, the competition that goes on between churches, the, you know, Christians just like not like bickering over big things and little things, just hopeless to me. Like, these people who are supposed to have hope, all they can do is bicker over everything. Are you serious? And let's be people who bring hope to this world instead of more fighting. Let's bring hope to this world that desperately needs hope and desperately needs to know about Jesus and desperately needs to know about this new creation where he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And so I urge you just to take that mantle of hope on you today. Not that your despair, not that your struggle is going to instantly disappear, but you're taking on hope. Right? You're allowing God to handle those heavy things, and you're taking this hope with you to others, and people need it. People in our world need it. Those around us need it. So as we work towards this new creation power, we work in a manner that is hope-filled, filled with hope for the future, filled with hope for the things to come. And we don't do these things out of just having to make a paycheck or just get stuff done. We do these out of a kingdom mindset, out of a future of a life and a hope and a world to come where God would literally be dwelling with us and right beside us, where he will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away, y'all. Carry this mantle with you into your work, into your life, into all the things that you do. That's my encouragement for today. So listen, I hope y'all have really enjoyed this series. I have really enjoyed talking about all these things and just kind of digging into the book of Revelation. I think there's a lot of really good stuff here. I think we can learn a ton from this book and what it has to offer us. And so I just ask, you know, if you've enjoyed this episode or these episodes, just share them with a friend, share the series with a friend, get the word out about A Theology of Hustle. Next week, I'll be back. Hopefully with some interviews for y'all. I have some great people on the docket that you're just going to really love. And leave me a rating and review, you know, share all those good things. I greatly appreciate it as always. And until next time, get out there and hustle.